Magic,
and the magic, world of illusion.
Magic TV
and Craig Petty proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
Back to Magic TV. My name's Craig. It is 9 o'clock, which means it's time for a Talk Magic interview. And today I'm going to be interviewing somebody that you've heard me talk about on the channel an awful lot. We have reviewed many of this man's items, and every single time we've reviewed something of his, it has had an incredible review. He is a creator, he is a performer, he is an innovator, he is a lecturer, and everything he brings out is super clever, super commercial, and very, very fooling. I don't think I've been fooled more by one person than I have this man. I'm super excited to have him on the channel. I can't wait to chat to him more about his life in magic. I am, of course, talking about the one and only Martin Pierce. How are you doing, Martin? You okay, my friend?
I'm fine. Thank you very much for inviting me on your TV. Yeah, really looking forward to chatting with you. And yeah, thanks for your kind words as well.
It's true. I'm a huge fan. Ryland's a huge fan, you know, and, you know, I've been wanting to interview you for a while, but then obviously you came along to the House of Secrets when Ryland was there and came and watched the show. And that's when we actually put this together. And I'm so glad I have, because this is going to be a really fun interview for me, because normally when I'm interviewing people, I kind of know everything about them because I've studied their career. And I don't know that much about you beyond the fact that you've got some very bloody clever tricks that always seem to fall the pants off me. So it's going to be really interesting to find out more about you. Hopefully we can delve into your creative process, and we can talk about all things magic. Does that sound good?
That sounds really good, Craig. Perfect.
Brilliant. Now, for those people who don't know what you are or who you are and haven't bought a trick with your name on it, let's start from the very beginning and give people a frame of reference and talk about your origin story. So, Martin, my first question to you is, how did you get into magic? When did it all start, and how did that all happen?
Well, it started a long time ago. I probably started into magic about 35 years ago. Again, I got the obligatory Paul Daniels magic set. Loved it, started performing it. And of course, as we're very egotistical as magicians, people say, oh, that's really good, can you do some more? And I just, you know, just love having my ego massaged and all things like that. So, yeah. And then basically, I joined a magic club.
How old were you when you got that Paul Daniels magic set, if you don't mind me asking?
That's a good question. I was probably about 16, 17 years old. So I was just about leaving school. Yeah, as I say, I loved it. I loved doing the tricks. I loved the reactions from people, as we all do as magicians. That's why we do our job. And yeah, just loved it. And people were saying, oh, do some more. And yeah, it was great. As I say, for me, it was like, I've always enjoyed watching magic and then realised I could actually perform it. And in them days, I'm showing my age now, it was a case of, you know, you had to sort of read a book. I've got some books as well on magic. And you was holding a grip, and to turn the page, you literally had to bide your head down and blow the page over because you didn't want to lose your grip of what you were reading and all things like that. Yeah, I've always loved my magic, and as I say, it's just got stronger and stronger as it's gone on.
Wow. And you said you joined a magic club. So how old were you when you joined a magic club?
Well, I joined a magic club quite later than most people would join a magic club. I say I started performing, not professionally, but sort of from the Paul Daniels magic set from about 18 years old. And I didn't join a magic club. I wasn't aware from probably for about another 10 or 12 years. I started out in Covent Garden. I used to ring a bell, come out, oh, yay, it's magic time, draw up a crowd and all things like that. And I wasn't aware of magic clubs at all. And it wasn't until probably about the year 2000 that I actually thought there's actually magic clubs. For some reason, I was just unbeknown to magic clubs. And I never really mixed with people that sort of done magic. And I sort of stumbled across it in Ilford. I joined the Ilford Magic Society probably in about the year 2000. And it was an eye-opener. There was people of all different standards. It was a little bit clicky, if I'm honest, but there was a library there. I enjoyed watching the performers and all things like that. And it just progressed from there.
Oh, wow. Okay. And I don't know everything about your career, but I believe you're semi-professional. You're not a full-time pro. Is that right?
I've been a full-time pro for about 35 years now, Craig.
You've been a full-time pro. Oh, sorry. I didn't realize. Oh, I'm so sorry. I don't know what you think.
I want to take offense now. I've been a
full-time. Like I say, I don't know your career as well as I do others, so I'm very sorry.
No, what happened was, when I left school, my dad owned a snooker hall. And the first job I had was a professional snooker player because I got very good because my dad owned a snooker hall. I could go down the snooker hall after school and just play a lot of snooker, and I got very good. And everything I do, I always give it 100%. And I started doing some competitions. I don't know how good your knowledge of snooker is, but there was a professional called Ray Reardon who was a 6-time world snooker champion.
Remember?
And I beat him in a tournament. And I was all over the back pages of the paper, like teenager beats a snooker ace or things like that. And from that day, from the very next day, I became a professional snooker player for about 5 or 6 years. I was paid to play snooker, teach people, and basically given a car to drive around and just play snooker tournaments.
Wow.
That was a great life. Honestly, I was earning a lot of money for those days, and it was a great life. But obviously, it's not a life for a man that sort of wants to settle down and get married. So I've done it for a while.
Yeah. Let's say, while you were doing that, did magic go on the back burner? Of course, I imagine if you were a full-time snooker player, you'd have to focus on that, right?
It did, yes. The magic sort of took place after the snooker. So, I did the snooker for a while and I thought, you know, I'm going to have to settle down and get married and all things like that. And when you played the snooker, you played in what's called graveyard tournaments, which means they started at midnight. And they went on till about 12 or 14 hours, depending how far you got in the tournament. So you was literally doing 3 or 4 of those a week. And it just took up your whole life. But I'm thinking, if you're going to settle down, get a mortgage, you know, find a wife, et cetera, et cetera. It's a good life for a single man for about 5 or 6 years. So, then I started doing the magic. I say I did the Covent Garden, did that for a few years.
I love the fact that your solution to needing more stability in your life was to go and do street theatre. It's like, you know what? I need more stability in my life. What am I going to do? I'll go busking.
Brilliant. My dad was a bookmaker, so he always told me to take risk in life. He said, you know, you never know what tomorrow's got in store for you. So it's literally like there was an opportunity to come up, and I took it, and I loved it so much, Craig. Honestly, I was in my element. You know, I enjoyed the snooker, but when I was doing the magic, I was just got the adrenaline rush big time. And everyone comes. The thing with our job, once you do a bit of magic, everyone comes over and shakes your hand and says, thank you, you've done a great job, et cetera, et cetera. How many office workers, they go to work 9 to 5, they never get a thank you all day long. Lucky if they get one all year long. Mm-hmm. So, it's great. So I loved it. And as I say, from that, people were saying, do you do parties, etc., all that sort of stuff. And basically, I used to take phone numbers and do parties. And I thought, well, that's a bit more stability. I could actually book shows, etc. So, about 35 years now, I've been doing the magic full time. And as I say, I still love it. I've still got the freshness of doing it. The show I'm doing like tomorrow, it'll still be like it's my first show. It'll still be my voice going up and down and putting everything into it and making sure that show is the best show ever.
And you're saying shows. I mean, what do you predominantly do within your career? Is it close-up magic? Is it stage shows? Is it like, did you do kids shows at one point? Like, what type of magic do you do?
Right. Well, I'm Mr. Marvel, the children's entertainer. So he's you might know of me, but I go under Mr. Marvel. And if you look for me on Facebook, my name is Martin Marvel because everyone's known me as Mr. Marvel for X amount of years. So that took up my sort of during the day time. So I'd do an 11 to 1 show, then a 2 to 4 show. And then in the evening, I'd go off and do a wedding starting at 6 o'clock and do a couple hours of close-up. And if they wanted to do parlor magic or stage magic, you know, I would do that as well. So basically, I'm a jack of all trades. I do everything, wherever there's a party, I'm there. So again, it's another great thing. Everything we walk into, as you know, is you never know what you're going to walk into. You think you've seen it all, and then you haven't.
Totally. I can completely agree with that one. What's your favorite type of magic to do? If you do predominantly close-up and kids, what's your favorite type of magic to do?
Close-up? I get asked that question a lot, and I think the basic answer is, if I'm doing a lot of kids shows, I want to do some close-up. And if I do a lot of close-up, I want to do stage. And if I do a lot of stage, I want to do... So it all varies. I mean, I love them all, really. So if I'm honest, I probably haven't got a favorite, but if I'm doing one more than I usually do, I'm looking over my shoulder thinking, I want to go back to doing that again. But yeah, I'm just prepared for all occasions. As I say, I really enjoy my job. I'm very lucky.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, do you ever get the itch to go back and do Covent Garden again? Or is that, you know, that's kind of like, that was a good stepping stone at the time, but
It was a great stepping stone at the time. I think the stipulations of going there and performing, like insurance-wise, how to get there, how many performers I have, are a lot different from the 1990s when I did it. So I do think it's a lot harder to do it now. But I still go down and watch them, and I take my hat off to them. So I know what it's like. And another thing, my voice from 35 years of shouting and performing, I'm not sure how if it take too many Covent Gardens these days.
That's funny. So what advice would you give somebody who's deciding to, you know, you went pro very early on, you know, you've been professional now for 30 odd years. What advice would you give to somebody who's considering going full time into magic? Because I get that question all the time on this channel. I'm thinking about going full time. Should I do it? Should I make the jump? What advice would you give somebody?
I would say slow steps. I would go out with someone who does do it full time. And decide if that's something you want to do. So I would say to someone, oh, you're a full-time magician, do you mind if I come along, just tag along, take a chair at the back of the room, and then you'll get a feel for it. If that's your character, if that's your persona, or what they're performing, you can adapt to your persona and put your own spin on it. But the real life situations will only come in once you've seen it in real life. So it's a major step doing a bit of magic for your friends and family to going out to performing to like 30 children or, you know, adults around the table and things like that, because reactions are going to be different and you've got to be prepared for that. So that's what I would say. Again, join the Magic Society, and when they go out and do their charity nights, their open evenings, just go and perform a few tricks. And, you know, if you're comfortable performing in front of people, and you're getting that kick like I do and like you do as well, if you get that buzz, thinking this is for me, I really enjoyed this, then yeah, take a chance, make a step. As I say, my dad was a bookmaker. He always told me to take risks in life. And yeah, obviously don't throw your house away or anything like that. But yeah, nothing ventured, nothing gained. But yeah, I would recommend going out with someone who does it full time, watch them and think, yeah, could I do this? And yeah. That sort of thing, really, and say go out of a society and just do a few tables and see if that buzz is there. I'm sure it will be.
That's great. And what made you, because obviously I know you as a creator and you've created some amazing stuff. Let's talk about things from a creative point of view for a bit.
Yes.
So what made you decide to create magic? Not just create magic, because a lot of people create it. But a lot create it and then sell it. Yeah. What made you decide to go down that route? When did all that kick off and happen?
Right. What happened was that when I joined the Magic Club, I think I said it earlier, I found it a little bit clicky. So they'd had lecturers down there. I'm not going to name names because they're not here to sort of put anyone down. And the performer in question was great. He did a lecture, and his first show, he did a side still and the car was on the ceiling. And for his second effect, he did a side still and the card was on the window, and then it was in his wallet. And the whole lecture was him doing one move. And I looked at the people around the room, and they couldn't do the move. So for them, the whole lecture was a bit of a waste of time, really. I could see him looking around and sort of looking disappointed and things like that. And I'm thinking, well, magic doesn't have to be like that. You don't have to be better than someone. You know, I basically decided with my lecture, the first lecture I did, I wanted everyone to get something from my lecture. So I did what's called the EEE lecture, and I'm doing about my fourth one now. It's called Easy, Effective, and Entertaining Magic. So it's magic that's easy to do, it's entertaining, and it's effective. So you look at it and you think, wow, that's a nice piece of magic. And when you're shown how to do it, you go, oh, really? Oh, things like that. So it was to make the magic community together. I think there's, in my opinion, there's a little bit of divide there sometimes. Other people sort of, because they're not as good as them, they sort of don't associate with them. But people go to a magic club for a reason. They go to learn magic, they go to the library, they go to socialise, and they go there to be better. So, yeah, my aim was to create magic that everyone could do. And my magic that I create is for all level of performances. So no matter what your standard is, you will get something from the night, even if it's like a really wicked method. It's just something you do. I get a real kick out of people doing my magic, and I'm sure you do the same, Craig, because
absolutely.
When someone's performing your magic, you're thinking, you just get that really nice feeling there. And you shouldn't be going to a club saying, I'm better than you, I can do this, and you can't do it. You should be going to a club and saying, wow, that was good, and everyone talking about it. So, yeah, I've decided to do what's called my EEE lecture, which is effective, entertaining, and easy to do magic. And it went down a storm. Everyone loved it. I thought, okay, I'll do another club, and I'll do another club. And I've been doing that for about 3 or 4 years now. I've been changing it all up. I come out with completely new effects. And, that's when I started creating magic. I thought, I've got one of these really sad memories that I can read a book and it just sticks in my head. And I know your knowledge is incredible as well, Craig, so I'll take my hat off to you. But, it's just one of those things. I can read a book and I can just remember methods. And if you can know a method that can make the trick look entertaining and they can't sort of recall how it's done and all things like that. As I say, all my magic is like that, as you probably know. You look at it, and once you know how to do it, you think, well, that's easy to do. But the first time you see it, hopefully you say, wow, that was good.
Mm.
Either effective. And also entertaining as well. I like the entertainment factor as well. At the end of the day, you've got to put a smile on people's faces and you want to give them a memory as well. You want to go there and give them a memory that they could, like, you know, say things like Sweet FA, which is one of my early one. People still remember the cards they chose. So they go, you did Sweet FA. I chose the five of clubs and, you know, I didn't win much.
Wow. Yeah. It sounds like an amazing lecture. But you were creating and releasing magic before you even put a lecture together, weren't you?
Yes.
So the lecture came after... magic. So what I'm interested, but what made you, I want to know everything that you bought out and the order you bought it out in, but I want to know, first of all, what made you decide to actually create and release a product? Because there's so many people that get into magic and they kind of go, you know what, I could be a creator. I could do that. And it never happens. And we stand, you know, we put creators on pedestals in this industry and it's kind of like, oh, I want to be the next Greg Wilson. I want to be the next Jay Sankey. I want to be the next Peter Nardi. And a lot of people rush to create magic and put out any old tat. You've not done that. You created a whole bunch of stuff. It comes out very slowly. And every time something comes out, it's really, really strong. Like you say, Triple E. So what made you go down the route of actually going, you know what, I want to actually start releasing magic? Where did your first trick get released from and how did that all come about?
So the first one I've released was this DVD. It's called Perfect 10. I think that was released in 2011. And basically it's 10 card tricks, but with some methods that you could use for other things as well, like a bit of coin magic and some mentalism stuff as well. So, yeah, again, the reason I created it, because there's a lot of magic out there that's unnecessarily complicated. So I looked at it and I thought, I can streamline that, have the same end effect where it's really good, and just cut out all the fancy kerfuffle in the middle. And also with the DVD as well, say this is my first one, I decided to cut out all the, this gave me the idea from page 63 of the Royal, what was so popular about the DVD when it came out is the chapters. It was like performances and explanations. So you could click on the performance and you click on the explanation. There was none of the bubble in the middle. So, yeah, I mean, I made 100 of these myself, and they sold out, fortunately. Everyone seemed to love the method, the idea of, like, I can watch it and perform it without having to go through pages and pages of stuff that I don't really need to know about. Because when people buy an effect, they want to perform it, don't they? Let's be honest about it. Get excited, and they want to perform as quickly as possible. So, again, these were not knuckle-busters by any means. I think the worst thing you're going to do on there was Hindu Shuffle. And, yeah, I started to do magic at the Magic Club, and people saying, oh, it's really good, yeah. And when I told them how they did it, they was, like, completely floored about how easy I'd done it. And I say, why don't you put a few together? So I think I did, what was it now? Yeah, 5 for 5. I'll tell you what I do. I'll do, like, a little lecture book, 5 tricks for a 5. If any of you guys want it, just take it. And, of course, yeah, they loved, they just got excited by the stuff in there. So, yeah. So I've just done the DVD as well. And again, I was quite lucky. If they hadn't sold, or the DVD hadn't sold, my confidence would probably be low. And I'm thinking, oh, I won't bother as such. But people were excited by it because they could do the stuff on there. They could go and do it and get genuine reactions and feel really good about themselves, Craig. They could just sort of get excited by it. So, yeah, I just wanted to create magic that everyone could do.
And, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great. So you self-published the DVD, and the first few things you self-published them yourself, because that's the other question that people have when they speak to me, and they go, hey, you've released a whole bunch of magic. What's the best way to release a trick? Which company should I go for? And it's interesting that you started releasing magic by not even going through a company.
That's true. Yep. I didn't approach Peter Nardi to about 2014, maybe even later than that. Again, I was just bringing stuff out of lectures and in small doses and selling it. And
what made you decide to go with a magic? Because I think you've bought everything out pretty much exclusively through Ace Magic Studio and Alakazam, which are kind of part of the same anyway. What made you decide to go with Pete then? Because you've been successfully producing magic for the best part of 15 years. You know, if you spoke to Pete in 2015 and you started shortly after going to Ilford, that's about 15 years. You've been producing and lecturing yourself, not having to rely on anybody.
Yeah.
What did you decide to go? Because that's another question people have, isn't there? What, you know, which company should I go to? What, how should I approach them? You know, there's a million questions like that. As somebody who was successfully bringing magic tricks out, what made you decide to go with Alakazam and go with a magic company anyway?
Well, again, it's, again, taking the risk factor, really. I could only manufacture so many DVDs. They're not too bad to manufacture. As you probably know, they're not that expensive to manufacture. You can do DVDs yourself. With tricks, it's a bit of a different ball game. So let's take something like Sweet FA, for starters. For these to sort of come out cheap for me, you have to buy in quantity. So I showed Peter, and he thought it was amazing. I showed Gary first of all, actually. Gary's the one that sort of made them up from Ace Magic Studio. Again, it's a Sweet FA. I went and created a card effect that obviously it's hundreds of card tricks. No, there's thousands of card tricks, tens of thousands of card tricks. I wanted to create a card trick that everyone's going to remember. So I'll come out with this one because, touch wood, hopefully people will remember it. So I showed Gary and I said, look, you're a graphic designer. I'm not a graphic designer. I can make a setup. I can handwrite it, but it won't look as good as a nice glossy deck with a nice glossy case on it and all things like that. So I can't do that. I can perform magic. I can teach magic. I can lecture magic. But again, I can produce a DVD. But things like this is a bit out of my jurisdiction. That's sort of, you know, I can do most things. I can't do these. I need someone with a brain on that says righty-ho. And as I say, I'm not going to show you the back to the cards. I'll just show you. He just produced these. This deck of cards here I've been using for about 5 years. And look at they're so vivid and colourful. And on the back it says £1,000 worth of Amazon vouchers. The cards are beautiful. I could never get like 300 decks made up for the price he can get 300 decks made up. So, again, I had this great trick. I wanted it out there for people to perform, but I hit the wall saying, right, I can't do this last bit. I can teach you how to do it. I can tell you what to write on every card, but I can't get the quality that I want on it. I want this to be like a massive trick. So I approached Gary. Gary done the graphic design on it. And it took off from there. We took to Blackpool about 5 years ago and it sold out on the first day. And the thing is, people didn't realise it was me, but actually it was my trick. And they came up to me, "Oh, I like you so much, I want you to win a prize." They actually did my own trick on me without even realising it's my trick. So that's the reason. I could only do so much and on some tricks. So to take this further, I just needed help. I stayed with Alakazam because Pete's such a great guy. As I say, I don't need to look anywhere else. I know you bring out tricks to other people. And again, I bow to your superior knowledge and your experience. What's best for you? But for me and my predicament at the moment, Pete's my main man. So
Pete's great. You'll never hear me say a bad word about Pete and Nardi and Alakazam. They're fantastic to deal with and wonderful people and honest and caring and nice and all that wonderful stuff. And you've definitely done a great job. And he's so vocal about how amazing you are. So how do you, obviously you originally approached Gary and
yes.
Gary put you in touch with Pete or organized everything. But since then you've been contacting kind of Pete directly. You've been going more direct to Alakazam. Yes.
Yeah, Gary, other things going on. I did what's called a self-working Wednesday series with Peter. So basically the idea was I went down to Alakazam studio and I taught, I think it's 12 tricks, and it went into your Alakazam account every Wednesday, and it was a self-working trick, or one of my own sort of self-working tricks. So every Wednesday, someone would open there with Alakazam and there'd be a trick in there. Every Wednesday, it'd be a card trick, ESP trick, mentalism trick, coin trick, whatever. We mixed it up, and again, it got great responses. The videos, I think that was probably about 5 or 6 minutes. Again, it was a performance. It was an explanation, and it's a brief bit of history, like why we did the effects, and just a couple of handing techniques just to make it that little bit stronger. So we did those self-working Wednesdays, and it went really well. But after the self-working Wednesday, we filmed it. I showed him Beer Money, and he was like, "Oh, okay, do it again." And then Harry had to come out the back, do it on Harry, and then Andy came out, do it on Andy. And he honestly was so forward. And literally before I left the shop, we finished filming that day about 5:30 because we done, from 10 o'clock in the morning, we done 12 performances, 12 explanations, had a bit of lunch in the middle. Just an afterthought. I'll show you one more thing before I go. And he wouldn't let me leave until he'd ordered Beer Money. He phoned Adrian up, who's his main man. He ordered on that day. And Beer Money from A to B was probably about 6 weeks. It was literally that quick. And I take it as a real compliment from a man like Peter Nardi to him to sort of say, "I want that now." He had the contract in my mailbox the next day.
Wow.
It was literally like, we can take this to America. This is great. He's just like, he loved the bar betcher. He just loved everything about it. And he loved you could control everything about it. So, I took that as a good compliment.
Really, wonderful trick. It's really, really good.
Thank you. But, I'll take it as a real compliment. We obviously had a long day, filming all day, had the lunch and all things like that. It was just an afterthought. I thought, I'll show him that. And, of course, we were there longer. And he was saying, do it on him. That's a Peter trick. He absolutely loves it. And if you go in the shop, I guarantee you, that one behind the counter ready to show you.
That's amazing. That's really, really cool. And what else have you released with Alakazam? Is it just those two? I feel like it's...
No,
Ryland's favourite trick. Food for thought. It's in his wallet everywhere he goes. It's a great trick.
Yeah, again, I bought on the DVD, I bought a trick out called 5-4-3-2-1. Which is a very similar method to Food for Thought. But I was thinking, all the tricks out there, there's not many fast food tricks, is there? I mean, everyone's got a story about fast food, whether it's like a bad service for a pizza, about McDonald's. Everyone's got like a story related to it. I'm thinking there's nothing out there that I can think of anyway that has McDonald's, Subway, KFC, pizza, nothing out there at all. And I'm thinking, well, what about if we had loyalty cards? You know, it might be in the future we have loyalty cards. So let's come up with a trip with the loyalty cards. And yeah, and there's a lovely three-way prediction at the end. You build up to it. The spectator makes every choice, and then bang, you hit them at the end with a lovely three-way prediction. And again, you can hide, you get a card in there as well. You can hand write it yourself if you want to. But yeah, it proved really, really popular. As I say, we've had like the credit cards, and they look the business. I say, Gary done the credit cards, fair play to them. They look the business. They're vivid, they're colourful, they're wiped clean. So you've got no issues with that. And you can literally just open your wallet and do a nice like 5-minute routine with a real killer kicker ending on it.
Wow.
Yeah. And we had a trick called the Chocolate Challenge, which I brought out for Zoom. So you've got 9 chocolate bars there. And, you know, you can say, you know, take 5 moves. One, I don't think you're on that one. Take that one away. Oh, that's it. Sorry. You've got a psychic pound coin. You're in a psychic sweet shop and you've got a pound coin. So you move the pound coin on and basically you eliminate them one by one. And then when it comes to the end, they end up on the Twix and you've got a prediction there with a bag in it. You open it up, it's Twix. Or I used to say, I've always got a few Twix up my sleeve and just pull a Twix out my sleeve. And I said, remember at the start, you only had £1 to spend in a psychic sweet shop. If you stopped in the Mars bar, you use £1.20. This, you know, crunchy £1.50, that's from the Shell garage, all the jokes in like that. You only have £1 to spend and you turn it over and the Twix is the only one you could afford. It's the only one that was £1. But the good thing about that was it was a Zoom trick. And again, that really took off. That was the idea of it. It was like 9 things there. They make every single choice, but you can force whatever one you want to. So I always force the Twix. And yeah, that was a good one. And then we had T-Can. We had Vegas Choice. It's been a few, and touch wood, they've all been really popular. So
they have. I mean, they're really popular. And one thing that I've noticed about all of the tricks that you bring out, at least all the ones that I've seen, is there's normally a very old principle.
Yes,
underlines everything. It's not a knuckle busting trick that requires lots of sleight of hand. You've normally got a really interesting hook, like, you know, we talked about the heads and tails, perfect example. Another great example is Food to Go. Really interesting props, really interesting premise, but yeah, something that almost is accessible to everybody. Like you say, really easy to do. Was that done by design? Did you kind of think, you know, I want this accessible to everybody? Because I know that you're capable of doing sleight of hand, but it's not something that you see a lot in many of the effects that you bring out. So
yeah, yeah. I tend to as I say, I was quite lucky when I went to the lectures. I was one of the few people that could actually do the side steal and do the bits and pieces that were necessary. But again, as I say, I just created the lecture for the people that couldn't, and I just tend to follow that route with the effects I bring out. I mean, I've got quite a following. People sort of like my effects. They say, oh, when you're bringing the next one out and things like that, because they know it's within their capabilities and they can do it. But also the people like yourself, who are, you know, very, very capable sleight of hand experts, they get a kick out of it as well. But yeah, I just know so many methods, Craig. I really do. Another thing about me, which you may not know, I'm a bit of a serial quizzer as well. So I've got one of them sort of photographic memories. I've been on The Chase, Countdown, Winning Combination, Eggheads, Weakest Link, all things like that, just because I've got one of them memories. I don't try and remember things, but we'd be watching EastEnders on telly and there'd be a fire extinguisher in the background I picked up on, and they cut back to the scene later on. They've obviously edited it. I say to Robin, where's the fire extinguisher gone? You go, what fire extinguisher? And of course she puts it back and I say, oh, I don't know why I do that. I just got one of them memories that stick in there. So I'm quite lucky. I love reading my magic books, and I managed to digest it and keep it in there. So I know so many methods. And yeah, I try and use the methods to take the sleight of hand out of it, to make the magic accessible for basically people who want to perform it, is sort of my mindset.
But where do you get your inspiration from? So what's your creative process like? You're wanting to bring another trick out. Do you sit there and think of a trick, or does it pop into your head, or do you just like make notes as you're going along and then dip into your notes? What's your creative process like, Martin?
Again, I don't know why. I've literally got loads of stuff that I want to bring out. As I say, I think that I've shown you the lucky numbers one. Again, my process for this was, there's not many lottery tricks out there at the moment. There's not many good lottery tricks out at the moment.
And you showed me that at the House of Secrets. You showed Ryland and you showed me, and it blew our mind. Absolutely blew our mind. That is incredible.
Thank you.
That's an incredible trick, Martin. That's an incredible trick.
Yeah, there's a lot of work that went into that, as I say. And this time last year, when Robin went away with her friend, who's I'm taking a place of this year, I don't get much peace and quiet in the house. I say, I've got children as well. I've got O'Hara, who's the same age as Ryland. So, you know what it's like. You don't get like the peace and quiet you want to do to do it. And I actually scrapbooked this, first of all. It was literally like, okay, I'm going to write the story out. I'm going to type it out. I'm going to glue it in a book. And it took me, literally 10 days. And when I say 10 days, I get so excited and involved in it. It's not like 10 days of like 10 o'clock to 1 o'clock. It's like 10 days of 9 in the morning till like 4 in the morning, because I don't want to put it down. I'm doing it and I'm thinking, I want this to be the best trick ever. I want to maximize this book test. I want this to be as good as that. So, my mindset with this was, there's not many lottery tricks out there. In my opinion, obviously there are some great lottery tests out there, but in my opinion, they could be a little bit better. How could I make it a bit more exciting? So, I come up with this. The stories are all true. Everything can be examined. They're in Peter's shop at the moment. We've just got to go down and film it and decide what we're going to do with it. I think Peter's quite keen on holding back for Blackpool. Obviously, I'd like it out a bit quicker than that, but Peter's a man. He knows better than me. But, we're going to send this out to a few mentalists and they can do it. But the stories are really interesting as well. It's got great stories in it, and they can turn to any page, or they can just read the title from the contents page and you can tell them the six colours of the lucky numbers. The actual six numbers, whether the person's male or female, the amount they won on the check, the date on the check. You've got 16 different reveals, and they say it's all fully examinable. So that's my thinking for lucky numbers anyway. So hopefully you'll see that soon. I know you've seen it anyway, but hopefully you're watching and see that soon.
That is almost like an act in your pocket, that. I mean, you were showing me and Ryland the trick, and it was like, okay, now I've got this, now let's do this. And I was there just going, I'm getting beaten up with lottery magic here. It's one of those things that's a great hook, because you talk about, hey, everybody plays the lottery. Everybody remembers Darren Brown predicting the lottery. The thing that most people say is, hey, can you predict the lottery?
Exactly. So
it's such a great hook and such a great premise for a trick.
Yeah, again, that was the thing. You get that ask, can you get the lottery numbers? So again, that was another reason. And my biggest problem with this, which Peter found hilarious, I've got so many reveals, I don't know how to reveal them. I can say, think of a colour, send it over to me, and I'm going to say, okay, and then say, 10, 11, 12, I'm going to try and pick up which one it is from that, and then I can write something down, and I get to the stage where I'm thinking, oh, no, what do I do next? It's just, so again, I'm going to get people's advice on that. I think we're going to ask the big boys, probably like yourself as well, to come out with some, original reveals on it, because you can literally reveal everything you need to know straight away. But yeah, that's my, again, like you said, people say, can you do the lottery? So that was my thinking for this one. And I'd like to think I've pretty much nailed it with this one.
But yeah, you have.
Thank you. And what I found great as well, obviously you liked it, but Rylan liked it. But what I liked about Rylan, he was reading the stories. Not only is it like you're doing this, Ryland's actually reading the stories about people, how they've wasted the money, like buying bits of land on the moon and, giving it to a cat sanctuary and giving it to charity and not telling anyone, all the things like that. He would have been there for the rest of the night, if you hadn't said, come on, you got to pay.
Oh, he would have. All he could talk about for the rest of the week was just that trick. He's just like, oh, I want that now. So, and it's interesting because it shows that it appeals to kids as well as adults. That's something that would appeal to everybody. Yeah, I think you've really knocked it out of the park with that.
Yeah, and also, I must say, when we saw Ryland in House of Secrets, it was amazing. For Ryland, and not because of his age, for him to do like 2 45-minute sets with a little break in the middle, he was fresh as a daisy. He could have kept going for another, you know. If you turn around and said to him, you do another 45, yeah, go on then.
He just loves magic. You know, he's just obsessed with magic 24/7. There's always something going on. He's just come back from Kidology yesterday after entering the Children's Entertainer of the Year. He's now rehearsing to go to the YMC this weekend because he's entering the close-up and the stage competition. Then next week he's back at the House of Secrets on top of all the other gigs he does as well. He has more flight time than most magicians put together, to be perfectly honest.
And Omar and my 10-year-old thought, you know, brilliant. You know, that week we saw Russ himself perform, and we went to see Paul Zerdin at the Horseshoe in Blackpool as well. And we saw another magician who was just doing like a bit of street magic as such. And I said to her, you know, who's your oh, Ryland was my favourite. Who's your favourite? Oh, Ryland was a favourite. He was the best one. So he's been put above some big names there. So fair play.
Well, I won't tell him. He's already got a big enough ego. We'll let him think it wasn't him.
No, he don't really want to bless him. He don't. He's fantastic.
Thanks so much. And like I say, he's a huge fan of yours. And like he doesn't do card tricks, really, but he loves everything that you've put out. And I just think, like I said, the premise is so interesting. Everything that you put out is so cool. So after the lottery trick, you say you've got loads of other stuff. Are we going to be seeing lots more from you in the coming weeks and months?
I've got one called Lost Property, which I've only done a couple of lectures of the new lecture. And I said to the people there, hey, guys, I'm going to show you something here. It's in the very early stages yet. I want to be honest with me. And I say, I've got an imaginary friend here. His name is Malcolm. He works on the train station. I won't go into the full routine. But basically, we got a cards, and they've all got lost property items on them, what people lose on the train. And it's, again, it's true facts. People leave, like, bicycles on trains, false legs, false teeth, obviously, like, the common things. So they choose anyone they want to. They mix it up as much as they want to, and your invisible friend Malcolm tells you exactly where in the deck their card is, so that they can't, you don't touch the cards at all. They count down to that card. So Malcolm says he's 33rd, that's too far down. He says he's 23rd. Actually, he's put it in 13th place. They do down the 13th card, their property there. And I say, have a look at the card above it, and they say, you know, send it over to me. And I go like this, send it over to me. And I say, is it something quite big? And they say, no, not really. I say, after three, name it. And they say, golf ball. And of course, golf ball drops down from my hand onto the table, giving it boom, 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 which is great.
Wow.
And you can change the last out as well. You can change it to a train ticket. You can change it to a dummy. There's 5 different outs for the last one as well. You can do whatever one you want to. But yeah, it's another one that I've had for a while for the method. And I just wanted to make it more entertaining. And I like to think that I've done it. I've done it with the, say, just by using things people leave on a train. People obviously lose things on train. They leave things on buses, you leave them in the house. And again, Robin came up with the idea of, why don't you have an imaginary friend who can find it? As I always say, oh, I'm going to try and find your bit of property that's lost in the deck. And Robin said, why don't you have an imaginary friend? I said, I've got one of those already. You need another one. So yeah, anyway, I've done it a couple of lectures, and like people have got, again, it's so easy to do, but the method just lost in the performance because you're sort of saying this and saying that. You've got your imaginary friend, they've got no clue how it's done and things like that. And it's exciting. I like to think it's exciting, it's entertaining, and it's yeah, that's one of the ones I've got to show Peter yet. Again, I could probably make that up, but I think Peter will do a much better job with me, and I'm quite happy with him to do it and things like that. And yeah, I've got another one about a dream I had as well. So they can go to, they've got postcards. They can choose any postcard they want to. They can roll 3 dice. They got a secret number. They got a secret destination. And you've got a notepad. And at the end, you just go through the notepad and it'll say, oh, I was going to do some magic. Chose a helper, very good looking helper. What was the destination you chose. They say Stonehenge. You say, oh, there's Stonehenge in the dark and it's completely black. And I say, do you know what Stonehenge really looks like? You turn it over and there's Stonehenge there. And you say, you rolled a number as well. What's the number? You turn it over and that matches as well. And that's just regular dice, regular postcards. Something I had for about a year. And I was happy with it, but I just wanted to give it that extra, like as you do, that extra, like, 5%, just to, like, yep, that's good, but I want to make it that good.
Yeah, so, I totally get you.
Yeah.
I totally understand that.
Do you ever start,
because this is something I know that a lot of creators deal with, have you ever had, like, writer's block, the magical equivalent of writer's block? Do you ever sit there and go, I'm going to come up with another trick. Oh my gosh, nothing's coming to me, nothing at all. Or is that never been an issue for you?
No, I'm quite, at the moment, it hasn't happened to me. My writer's block is, again, I say, like my What a Dream effect. I just want to give it that extra 5%. I'm thinking, how can I do it? And I say to people, like, I just want to give it that bit. And I just want someone to, even if they're completely wrong, just to put me in the right direction. Even if I say, you should do that with it. But they might say a word that sort of triggers me into giving it that last bit. So, I've got lots of ideas at the moment as well. So, and I won't say too much, but yeah, I've got, say, the lucky numbers will be coming out. They're in Peter's shop at the moment, Anakazam. Check them out. So hopefully we'll be filming that one when he's back from Safari Sugadi. So that should be too far away. And then obviously we've got the Lost Property and the What a Dream. And that should take us through to Blackpool. And I say, I've got another one, which I haven't got a name for yet as well. But loads going on in my head. I don't sleep at night.
Hell that, man. Wow. And here's a question for you. I've got one more question, which is, as somebody who's made their full-time income from magic for 35 years now, performing, creating, developing magic, lecturing, all of that, is there anything left on your magical bucket list that you haven't hit yet?
Right. I was going through that the other day, and I'm quite lucky. I've performed for quite a few celebrities. I've done David Beckham and Anthony Joshua. And then the big one last year, where I actually performed for the Royal Family. Wow. So, yeah. And again, I was at Buckingham Palace just before I saw you guys at Blackpool. So I was thinking, what else is there left to do? And there is. I spoke to Russ, and I'm thinking, Blackpool, I know you've done Blackpool, you've done amazing at Blackpool. I'm thinking, after that, I don't think I've got anything that I need to do. So, yeah, if I can get Blackpool on my radar, which hopefully I have, then I think I've pretty much achieved everything I have in the magic world. Say, I started with the street magic. Again, I don't think I mentioned, I did a couple of books as well, which sort of sold out as well. There's entertaining magic, and then I did more entertaining magic as well, because it was, you know, really popular. So I've done the author, I've done the effects. Yeah, I'd like to think I've ticked all the boxes, but you're more welcome to put me right. Yeah, Blackpool's on my radar, but I'm ambitious. I don't sit back on my laurels. And again, I say I treat every show as if it's my first show, just onwards and upwards. And I say to people when I lecture, I talk very quickly because I'm so enthusiastic and passionate about my magic. And I want you to go home and do my magic. I always say that to the guys there, because I do get excited by magic, and I still do. And the passion's still there. And that's the thing I want to do is to go to Blackpool and do a lecture down there.
Wow. Well, you know what? Blackpool are always looking for new lecturers. So, I know that, you know, the team that organised Blackpool watch these videos an awful lot of the time. So, hey.
Yeah, I spoke to Russ, and I've done the spade work there. I've actually done Blackpool not last year, the year before, and it went really well. But the unfortunate thing was Russ was away on one of his cruises, so he didn't get to actually see it. He said, sent me a message the next day, had great feedback and all things like that. But unfortunately, he didn't get to seeing himself. So we'll sort something out with a new one, fingers crossed.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I've got one other question for you. As somebody who now releases a lot of his magic through a magic company, We've talked about your creative process. Is there any advice you can give on like pitching a product to a magic company? I mean, I know you've got a great relationship with Peter Nardi now, so I know it's a very different situation to you because you've done so much with Pete. He looks at you as a, you know, like a sure thing, so to speak. So all you have to do is just ring him up and go, "Hey, Pete, got an idea. Let's jump on Zoom." And I'm sure he's going to be like, "Oh, yeah." But for anybody new to creating, they've got a great idea. They think it's the best trick in the world. They want to release it. They want to do it through a company. Any advice?
Oh, that's a tricky one, isn't it? Obviously, get advice off a respected magician like yourself, or hopefully like me as well. They come and say, "What do you think of this?" And we can say to them, "It's good, but," or say, "That is good, and that is a finished article." But yeah, don't be afraid. Film yourself doing it. Send the video off. Don't give too much away. I know you can trust a lot of people, and I say, you know better than me in that respect. But, you know, show the performance, send the performance off via WhatsApp to your company, and just ask them for their honest opinion, is what I would say. And then hopefully, if they like it, they go back to you and say, "That's a great trick. Can you come down to the shop, or can we meet up somewhere and let's do it in person?" So, yeah, that's what I would say. But, yeah, always get a bit of advice from a respected magician, hopefully like me, definitely like yourself, someone who's put some products out there. Yeah, there's obviously a lot of products out there, and you know, you've got to try to be original. So you don't really want to be putting a card trick out there where you count like 7 cards and then you count another 15 cards and things like that. You want something quite exciting. So you might have the best trick in the world, but it might just need a tiny bit of tweaking just to elevate it that little bit. Just get a little bit of advice and say, "That's going to make it more exciting." And that, you know, that'd be a unique selling point for you. Just something like that. But yeah, go for it. As I say, you've got nothing to lose. If you just sit on it for 3 years and someone else brings it out, you'll be gutted, wouldn't you? If you got this trick, you're thinking, "Oh, I'm not sure if I should send it off or not." So my advice would be, yeah, get someone's opinion who's sort of been out there and done it. You don't have to tell them how to do it. Again, that'd be up to the person there. They might have a bit of advice for you. If not, just approach the magic company, send them a video, arrange to meet up, just go down there and say, "Look, this is my trick." But if you do nothing, you're going to be upset if someone brings out something similar, or your might even be better, but it'd be too late. It'd be literally like, you know, someone's done that. It might not be as good as your one, but someone's actually brought that to market already. So, yeah, go for it. As I say, my dad was a bookmaker. Take a risk. Just go for it.
And one last question. Really great advice, by the way. One last question. You said at the very beginning of this interview that you do a lot of kids' shows. Have you ever thought about bringing out a kids' trick?
Yes. Again, I've discussed Peter with that. Yeah, I have. It's the only answer to that.
Is it something that you're going to be doing at some point in the future?
I think so, yeah. We got to the stage where I showed Peter this effect. And again, he had no idea how it was done. He was literally, and Harry was laughing. He goes, "You can't even get a kid's trick off Martin, can you?" We got that. And we looked into sort of how to make it up to sell it at a respectable price. But again, I think that was just before the COVID times, and we never sort of took it further. But yeah, it's something I do for my kids' show from sort of 5, 6, 7, and 8. It's a lovely piece of magic. Gets great response. It's built in entertainment. And at the end of the day, even the adults are going, "Come on, tell me. It's just like that. It's just one of the things where the kids don't really care how it's done because they've had a great 5 minutes of fun watching you do this event. And at the adults come on, How'd you do that one? I'll have to kill you, I say. But yeah, Craig, that is something that's definitely down the line. And I've got one or two things which is unique to Mr. Marvel that sort of I'm pretty sure no other children's entertainers do out there, which, yeah, I'm not sure if I want to keep it that way or not, but there we go.
That's awesome. That's awesome. You know, this has been an amazing interview, Martin. You know, there's very few people that come into this industry that can be full-time their entire life, that can perform close-up, stage, perform kids shows, create magic, lecture, write books, you know, release products. You should be so proud of what you've achieved within this industry. You know, most magicians, if they took a snapshot of where you are right now and said, would you like to have that by the end of their career? They would say, yes, hell yes, 100%. And you've done that. And you've, as you've said, you've got no intention of slowing down, which is amazing.
I'm always looking at the next thing, Craig. I think if I stop down and sort of do the self-appreciation, pat on the back, it's not really me. I treat everyone the same, whether I do a show for the Royal Family or like the, you know, the lady next door. I treat everyone the same. I know I always will do, and it works for me. But yeah, I'm not going to be looking over my shoulder thinking, I've done that. I'm just going to keep going, creating effects and putting a smile on people's faces. I'm still going to be going out performing. And I'm still going to be looking for the next best thing. I'm not slowing down at all.
Wicked. That's amazing. Martin, you're an inspiration. Thank you so much for coming on Magic TV. If people, do you have an online shop or do you just let Alakazam sell all of yours?
I let Alakazam deal with that. They've got everything that I perform, sort of brought out. They've got new magic books. They've got the DVDs. They've got all the effects I've brought out. So, the only thing people book through me is my lectures. So if they want to book me for a lecture, Martin Pierce or Martin Marvel, Facebook me on Martin Marvel, I'll be more than happy. I've got quite a few booked in. So I'll be more than happy to accommodate any clubs looking for a lecture, or just email me, martinpierce17@gmail.com. And remember, the Pierce is spelled very strange because I've got a dyslexic family. It's P-E-R-C-E. And it's one of my favourite jokes. It's like dyslexic, but we're KO now. We laugh after all these years. But yeah, Craig, the pleasure is all mine. You're an inspiration as well. I love the stuff you do. I think you're doing a great job with Rylan. And as I say, we met you both in person at House of Secrets, and it was great to meet you in person. So yeah, you're an inspiration. Keep doing what you're doing for the magic community, and I'll try and keep my end up as well.
Absolutely. And I will see you again soon, my friend. Thank you very much for everything that you've done. I want people that have watched this interview to leave a comment down below. Let Martin know what you thought of the interview. I'm sure that he will read them, so leave a comment down below. Don't forget, if you've not checked out Martin's amazing tricks, you can look in the archives on Magic TV and look at our reviews for the stuff that he's done. Spoiler, great reviews. You can go and check out Alakazam, search his name. Remember, it's spelled weird. And you can go and find out absolutely everything that he's done. Keep an eye out on all new future products. And remember, if you're looking for a lecture, go and email Martin now, because you're gonna have a lecture that's gonna come along, and it's gonna be usable stuff. And at the end of the day, most people that go to lectures, they want something that they can go away and do, and that's what you're gonna get from Martin's lecture. So Martin, one more time, thank you so much for coming on the channel. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Craig.
No problem. Guys, on behalf of Martin Pierce, thank you so much for joining me here on Magic TV. I'll see you again with another video on another day. But on behalf of Martin Pierce, my name's Craig. This is Martin. And this was Magic TV.
Thanks for listening to the Talk Magic Podcast.
Magic, magic.
Be
magic.
Sure to like and subscribe to the Magic TV YouTube channel.
Magic TV.
Which includes 14 unique videos every week. Whatever type of magic you're interested in, we've got you covered. Just search YouTube for Craig Petty's Magic TV, or click on the link in the description from this podcast below. Be sure to join us next Friday at 5 p.m. right here for another Talk Magic Podcast.